Hi there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. And now, enjoy the show.
Hey, welcome to the Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. And on today's show, we're going to be talking about humor in D&D. Is your DM funny? Are your players funny? Am I some kind of comedian to you? Do I look like a clown?
Before we get to that, we do have a few announcements to make, some exciting news on our end. The first is you probably noticed that there was a little music there at the start. We have a new theme song brought to us thanks to Matthew Pablo. And you can visit his site at matthewpablo.com.
That's great. Thank you, Matthew.
Likewise.
What else, Paul?
Yeah, okay, great. I'll keep going. we have or are starting to support now a audio-only podcast version of this show and have already transferred our entire backlog of shows to audio-only podcasts. Can they get that, Dan?
They should get that. I mean, first of all, it's such a great idea. I mean, we've had multiple people actually ask us for that. So thank you for making those suggestions. I wouldn't have thought of that myself. So it's actually a great idea. Paul has put that on a new website for Wandering DMs. So you can go to wanderingdms.com. Big surprise. But go to wanderingdms.com and you're going to see links to all of our other sites. So it's kind of a one-stop shop and audio versions of every single one of the shows that we've done to date for your podcast travel listening pleasure.
Yeah, so you'll find a lot of links on our website to where this show is being streamed, so our YouTube and Twitch channels, as well as our Twitter and Facebook pages. Also, all the audio is also being provided to all your normal sort of podcast distribution sites. So you'll be able to get it on Google Play or Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, whatever. Some of those are still in the process of being approved, so they may take a couple of days to push through. But you should be able to get the show pretty much everywhere.
Which is great.
Yes.
Which is great.
We're very excited about that. Also, sorry, go ahead, Dan.
Well, I was gonna prompt for you because again, you put this together, and so I one of the things I'm most excited about is the Patreon.
Yes, so we've launched our Patreon site as well. The link is again on our website, or you can go to it directly at patreon.com/wanderingdms. With all the work we've been putting into the show recently, it's not free for us, and so we thought maybe it was time to start passing the hat. So if you can help support us getting this show out every week and log on to Patreon and give us a little bit of seed money to keep going, we'd really appreciate it.
That would be a huge help. We would.
Awesome. Okay, with all that aside, I think we are ready to get into the guts. Yes, Dan?
Yeah. Excellent. So many things. So many things that just happened this week. That's amazing. I feel like it's every day I check my email and it's just blowing up with new stuff, which is great. So yeah, our main topic today is humor in D&D. So it's interesting because I mean my sessions always have humor, but it's not like something that I'm trying for. Is that one of your goals when you come into a gaming session?
I wouldn't say it's a goal, or at least not one that I've like consciously thought of. But certainly, I agree with you. There's a lot of humor, a lot of joking and laughing happens at pretty much every session I run.
Yeah.
I like it, and I appreciate it, and I would definitely be sad to play a game that was incredibly serious all the time.
Great point.
And certainly, like, I would say that's widely true for D&D, and maybe less so for other games, right? Maybe you want a different mood with your Call of Cthulhu game, but even then, I think humor finds a way.
I think you're right. When humor comes up, so I start thinking about the times when I have horribly failed, horribly tried to do it and horribly failed, which is the thing that really makes me reflect on when is it working and when is it not working. So for me, so I'll just come out with my embarrassing story.
Great.
Is
that me, should be like, quite funny for the rest of us.
or not. It might just expect, like, the story itself might not be funny.
Maybe just sad. Okay, go on, Dan.
Right, exactly. So either a happy face or a sad face at the end of this. So back in the 80s, I guess, so there's this game called Paranoia. And Paranoia itself is, depending on the product, either horror or comedy or something like that. I don't know. And so here is this product called, that you see on screen right now, this adventure called the Yellow Clearance Black Box Blues. And it won all kinds of awards. It had a halfway famous science fiction author named John M. Ford, who's himself won awards. And then this adventure won the, I don't know if this still exists, won the H.G. Wells Role-Playing Game Adventure Award for Best Adventure in 1985. So I got it. I had a group that wanted to play Paranoia. And reading this module is hilarious. Like, I recommend, like, if you can get a PDF copy or whatever and read it, it's honestly possibly, like, the best read that I ever had for an adventure at this point. It's like, this is great. This is the most amazing thing I've read for an adventure. Come to the table, and it is awful. And the problem is that the DM has to deliver the humor by completely taking away player agency. So there's like maybe four parts of this adventure. And the first one is the food vats in Alpha Complex get poisoned and everybody has hallucinations, including the players, and everybody goes on a crazy dance. Okay. Basically, that's the adventure, right?
Yep.
And so the players have no capacity to control their actions at this point. And they are, dancing through the streets of Alpha Complex, and they're on high catwalks like in Star Wars over dangerous equipment and over the food vats, and they're dancing spasmodically, mm-hmm. and they're shuffling, and they have no control over what they're doing whatsoever, and it's dependent on me, the DM, to just regale them with an I don't know how long half-hour story of what they're experiencing. And I don't know, maybe if I was like a better just like flat out outright storyteller, I could maintain people's attention for 30 minutes.
Right.
But
right.
I started to get into that and I was like, oh no, I have no input, right? There's no input coming into this performance.
Now, if you remember when we first proposed this topic of let's talk about humor, I thought it was actually going to be pretty important that we do the other topic first of... I've already forgotten what was our topic last week.
player versus character and where
player
is
versus
the
character,
separation.
Right. Sorry, right. And then maybe I'm blending this a little bit in my head with a recent blog post I wrote as well of sort of what is the DM's role? Are they a performer? Are they equal parts of player? Right. But it really gets into that sort of how much are the players contributing and how much is the DM just putting on a show? And it seems like this module is written with the high expectation of you are putting on a show for the players.
100%. 100%. And when I went and looked at a review of this module now, I guess if you go to Wikipedia and look at this module, it goes, this module was actually really fundamental to Paranoia in general because it really set the tone and set up a number of tropes that Paranoia would reuse later on. And there's a bullet point list, including like, the bullet point being like terrible things happen to players they have no control over, and if they attempt to influence it, it only gets worse.
Now I've played a fair chunk of Paranoia, and recently at a convention recently ran the latest edition, the Kickstarter one, which is highly improvisational. Like the whole point of that system is to only give you the barest of bones of what's going on and expect the players and the GM to improvise quite a lot.
Yeah.
Which seems like a major 180 from what you're describing.
That seems like major lessons have been learned. I mean, that particular adventure, from a classical novelist, whose habit is to write a narrative, an authorial narrative, really, really didn't work for me. And what you're describing as really focusing on the back and forth improv seems like major lessons have been learned.
Interesting.
And I would agree with that.
I mean, I really enjoy Paranoia, and I love the humor in it. But I guess here's going to be my thesis statement for this conversation, which is that I think humor works in games only when it is created at the table and not when it is pre-written in the material.
Right. So having gotten scar tissue over this particular paranoia adventure, I was really influenced by an article that Peter Adkisson, founder of Wizards of the Coast, wrote around 2000. And I was unable to find this exact article like today. But I remember him saying exactly what you just said, Paul, is I think he was talking about, he was recollecting walking around a Gen Con convention and going, you know, there's lots of tables here with lots of people laughing and having a good time and, you know, being entertained and having a lot of humor here. But none of it's written in the adventure. It's all coming organically out of the play. And I think in the 90s with second edition from TSR, for D&D at least, there was a lot of attempts to inject, funniness into the adventures. And here's Adkisson saying, our corporate philosophy is not to try to do that anymore.
Interesting.
We're going to make fairly serious adventures. And then if you and your group want to inject or want to take it on a humorous basis, we are confident that you can do that.
So so you've given me a lovely segue into my first encounter with humor in D&D specifically, and that was Fluffy Quest. So early 90s, Gen Con, I was there. I was a young 15-year-old at my first Gen Con, and there was a thing that was run there pretty regularly, and I went for a couple of years over that course of the early 90s throughout my high school years. So they would run convention games of Fluffy Quest. And for those who don't know, Fluffy Quest is basically just D&D from that time period, but with the the tendency of D&D authors to include sort of puns in the game turned up to 11. So the nature of the Fluffy Quest is always the same. There's a little white fluffy dog who has gone missing and you have to go save it. And there's a series of characters that, at least at that time, that everybody got to play, and they were always kind of the same characters with the same humor written into them. The thing that jumps out at me most of that is that if you played the magic user, all of the spells were rewritten to be humorous twists on the spells. I have the book here in front of me. I'll read a quick couple to you. Instead of Fireball, we now have Hairball. Instead of Rope Trick, we have Soap Trick, which causes a 10x30 surface to be covered in slippery, soapy film. Instead of Sleep, we have Sweep. Instead of Detect Magic, we have Defect Magic. Okay, anyway, you get the idea, right? So it's basically twisted all the elements of D&D to be silly puns. And my recollection of this at the time was that I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. There were other fans who loved it and thought it was hilarious. And a much larger contingent of the convention hated it and thought it was ridiculous and dumb and juvenile and why is it here?
Interesting.
I will even go... So the major memory I have from that period, again, I was quite young at the time, but I remember just prior to Gen Con on Wednesday night, there was an RPGA meeting and they would do sketches and whatnot to entertain each other. And somebody did a bit of filk that was the theme of which was, I've lost my tickets to Gen Con. What am I possibly going to get to play? And the punchline was, oh no, not Fluffy Quest.
That is an unfortunate legacy.
I mean, it's interesting, right, that in this case, the humor was somewhat written into the adventure, but really more written into the system. Right, yeah. The characters, the spells, the rules were all had these humorous tilts to them, and so maybe was a little more successful as a result. I would warrant that, maybe because we were kind of separating ourselves as players and making fun of the game that we're playing,
right?
Rather than trying to have humor in the context of the fiction,
I don't know. You know, likewise, you know, I had, you know, in high school, I played one single game of the game Toon,
mm-hmm.
right?
I remember Toon, yeah.
Which is very, you know, explicitly were trying to resemble Warner Brothers, you know, Bugs Bunny type cartoons. And we had trouble with it. It was, I mean, actually, it came with puppets, I guess. Like, the actual game box actually came with, like, some kind of cheap plastic puppets, if I recall. And we kind of struggled with it a bit. And the main thing I remember from that session was that one player got in an argument with the DM, whereby one player was like, you know, my bunny wants to have sex with that other bunny. And the DM says, that's against the rules of this game. And the player goes, well, why is that against the rules? And the DM says, it says right here, you know, attempting to have sex is funny, but actually having sex is never funny. And the player is like, that's not true. That's not true. It's totally.
Wow. Fascinating.
That's the main thing I remember about Toon, is that debate over the rule about whether sex is funny or not.
Sex is funny. Huh. Fascinating.
Yeah. Wow. And the DM, it's totally in the book. The DM totally turned around the rule book and said, here it is. And the player was like, that's not true.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. It's funny with Fluffy Quest, right? So the humor there, at least with the spells you're talking about, is mostly through puns. And looking back at particularly really old D&D adventures, it's really funny how the humor is all puns, like really how heavily pun-flavored it is. So there's a lot of encounters in those kinds of really early tournament type games where, you know, the monster in the room is entirely based on a pun, basically. And it seems dated. It seems like, I don't know if that's from a point where you're just taking the game so much less seriously, that people didn't mind that, but boy, and maybe we're taking the game more seriously nowadays, but boy, it would seem really out of place in my games now.
The odd thing about that is to go back to Paranoia, I think Paranoia succeeds and is really funny when you take the setting and the story very seriously, because it's insane and ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so by treating that ridiculousness with some level of serious, you know, like, this is the world, this is the world we live in, it really is like this, that's funny.
Right.
And then we all hoot and holler and laugh over the terrible things that happens to our characters.
Right. I agree. And I mean, frankly, you know, I would say the same thing about the modern superhero movies. Like, the point where they started to have a non-campy, we're taking this serious movie really made things much, much more enjoyable for me. In Paranoia, I remember for some reason, probably the time that I personally laughed the most in Paranoia was, you know, I was refereeing as usual, and my players kill some poor slob, and one of my players turns to me dead seriously and says, I call for the morgue bot. And I was like, I thought that was hilarious that there would be a morgue bot to be called. And I thought that he made it up, actually.
Right.
And I was like, that's brilliant. How did you come up with that? And he goes, that's actually in the book. It's actually the player's book has an example of play where the troubleshooters call a morgue bot. And he actually remembered that. And I didn't.
That's
and
funny.
So that was an actual real detail in the world that I didn't remember. And I thought that was the funniest thing ever at that moment.
That's great.
Yeah. So I agree with you that taking it. So it's interestingly, you know, okay. So if you look at a psychological theory of what is humor, right? The dictionary defines. I didn't look at the dictionary, but I could have. I could have. So I think that, I mean, what it comes down to is basically like a disruption of expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Is you're in some kind of psychological state, and then suddenly there's a disruption of expectations, and there's kind of like an emotional lockup of the person's system unable to deal with this radical shift in what they thought was going to happen. And so I think our games, you know, if they are tense, and if there's a lot of actual risk and danger, I think there's a lot of opportunity for that pressure or that stress to be disrupted with really honest, you know, an honest surprise of reversal in that. And so I think that sometimes the things that we laugh the hardest at is actually been set up by maybe a long, very tense moment. So if you try to say this here's a funny punny game, you lose the tension that is actually the setup to the actual real humor moment.
Yeah, that's a good observation. I like that. Yeah, and it jibes, I think, a lot with, like, you know, as we retell these funny stories of things that were hilarious in our games, like, you got to tell a lot, I think, right? Like, or oftentimes it'll boil down, oh, yeah, I guess he had to be there, or,
yeah.
Right? Like, yeah, because you didn't experience the tension leading up, you don't experience the release of the humor.
Right. And even when you say, here's this funny story, now you already know that it ends with, you know, amusement. Whereas at the time, you're grinding through a possibly horrible situation and you don't know what's about to happen.
Right.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that games continue to try and set up for humor. There's certainly plenty more games that continue to try to add humor. You know, I'm just realizing one thing I forgot to pull an image of is, of course, Kobolds Ate My Baby. There's a game that's very much built around being funny. But again, I think, like Paranoia, does so by taking its topic with a certain level of seriousness, even though it's ridiculous.
I agree. That's one. That's the best. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. I got some other examples here. Harmony Quest. Okay. This is more recent.
Harmony Quest.
What's
I
that?
I've enjoyed Harmony Quest quite a bit.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. Honestly, when I was trying to figure out actual play recordings of games, Harmony Quest is the first one that landed for me. I had listened to a few where I was like, I don't get it. I don't understand why people like this. And I liked Harmony Quest because it was highly edited, right? So basically, for those who don't know, Harmony Quest is Dan Harmon and his DM and a couple other players and usually a guest. Sit down and play D&D, and they record it, and then they edit it down, and they animate on top of it. So you have, you know, occasional shots of them sitting around the table, but more often animated sequences with their the audio from their game underneath it. Right. And it's full of typical Dan Harmon style comedy, which can maybe at sometimes be more puerile than some folks want. But yeah, it's they're definitely making a lot of jokes intentionally at each other and at the game. They've made their characters intentionally ridiculous often. But it's quite good. I enjoyed it a lot.
Now the DM who, like, in that shot you have right there, the big picture in the middle is the gentleman who makes the adventures and runs the DM. And I've forgotten his name. Do you remember his name, Paul?
Oh, not off the top of my head.
Yeah. So Paul's probably going to look that up. So, I mean, I think that he does a really good job. And he plays it straight. Generally speaking, he pretty much plays it straight.
He does.
And he's clearly really committed to, you know, running a, you know, TV-sized, you know, legitimate game of D&D. And the players are injecting humor. And the DM is largely playing, a straight guy. And personally, I think it works pretty darn well.
Yeah. Spencer Crittenden is his name.
And
my understanding is, like, he is just Dan Harmon's actual DM. Like, he was not an actor beforehand. He was specifically a DM who was running games for Dan Harmon and their group of friends. And they were like, we got to get this on TV. This is too much fun.
It definitely looks that way, too. He just has that, I mean, for me, he has that just tiny wisp of, like, you know, D&D player who might be a little bit on the spectrum, maybe, which endears him to me so very much. And I'm like, yeah, that's an actual DM happening there.
Yeah.
So it worked very, very well.
Yeah. So I enjoyed that. So this example of, at least a game being used for humor, which wasn't written for humor, but is being used for humor.
Right.
And then the other example I pulled up is Rick and Morty versus Dungeons and Dragons. So this is a newer product that started as a comic. It's a comic book that then now Wizards is about to publish a version of a box set of D&D that is like a new box set of D&D that is basically Rick's version of D&D. So it's from what I've heard, I haven't actually seen it yet, but from what I've heard, it's like the standard rule book, but it's all been highly edited by Rick. Like, he's written in the marginalia and he's modified stuff. Right. So it's Rick's version of D&D.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, isn't that great? Isn't that great? Right. So, and you know, part of this is, you know, certainly just a melding of, you know, old geek culture and new geek culture. Like, how can we get them together? But it's, I don't know, it's definitely, it's taking D&D, standard box standard D&D, and adding a layer of humor on top by putting it in the world of Rick and Morty.
We, you know, humor's niche-y, right? Yeah. Okay, so for like almost any humor thing, there's going to be people that like it and people that don't. It's very niche-y, and you can't hope to hit everybody. I personally really, really do like the Rick and Morty show, and it really does seem like a perfect match. You know, our friend BJ and I were talking a little while ago about how much of that narrative voice do you want to put in the rule book, and we were kind of wrestling about how well that's worked in the past to have the rules be delivered in character, and like the old Marvel superheroes game, I think it worked pretty decently with, and then some other times. It's maybe gotten in the way of really understanding the rules, but I personally really kind of want to read that because the Rick and Morty D&D comic worked very well,
yeah.
And it seems like a really perfect mashup for those properties.
Well, and I think it's very clever adding separate layers of like here's the text that's just teaching you the game, and then here's text that's in a different voice that is intentionally being funny.
Right.
Assuming that's what it is, which I think it is, but again, I haven't actually seen the product yet, so right. I don't know for sure. But that's what I've heard of it.
I would, if I had that in front of me right now, I'd be eager to crack it open and look at that because that sounds great.
Yeah. Likewise.
So maybe let's talk about. Do you have other specific games you want to look at, Paul?
I think that's all I have off the top of my head.
Okay, let's talk about a couple of specific techniques if you're sure. willing. So one technique for injecting some humor into a game would be like wordplay. And obviously a lot of D&D, like particularly the magic system, comes out of the works of Jack Vance, Dying Earth and stuff like that. You know, Wirt uses elaborate archaic wordplay. So part of what, you know, Vance does is uses really elaborate wordplay coming out of, you know, courtly language, coming out of the mouths of people who are really despicable lowlifes. And at least reading Vance stuff, that can be really, really funny dealing with this ridiculous elaborate wordplay. If I try to do that in the game, I can't make that happen. Like I'm just not good enough stringing the archaic words together to make that actually happen. When I was reading, reading some of Edison's The Worm Ouroboros, which is like one of the earliest fantasy books, and I was reading it the other week, and I was like, okay, I can just give up this whole thing, because there is no way in hell, like, I would have to work my entire life to be able to build up a vocabulary and habit of doing this, so I can't possibly do Vancian wordplay in my games.
It's weird. I mean, it's very interesting to hear you say that, because I've read those Vance books, and it never jumped out at me that, like, oh, what's great about this book is the wordplay.
Okay.
That's never... You know, in fact, I would say, if anything, I always felt that it was a bit of a stumbling block, that it was sort of like, okay. Oh, this is written in a really weird, difficult to parse style. But really? What I found humorous was the insane sort of sequence of events, right? These sort of reminds me a lot of a D&D game, honestly, of like,
yeah, true.
You know, of someone just makes a poor decision and then someone else makes a poor decision based on that and they start to compound, right? And that's what I really liked about Vance.
Okay. I mean, I feel like I like both. I mean, you're totally right. That's there. And for me, the really scumbag characters talking like they're in Elizabethan court trying to impress people also really tickles me all the time.
Interesting.
So there you go. So, I mean, sometimes the humor is niche-y like that.
Yeah.
On the other hand, as far as like a sequence of events that looks like D&D, Fritz Lieber's Fafhrd and Grey Mouser to me look like the most D&D thing that ever existed on paper. So just on the off chance, if one of our viewers hasn't read Lieber's Fafhrd and Grey Mouser, they absolutely should. The earliest stuff is best, by the way, by a long shot.
Yep, agreed.
But the events of Fafhrd and the Grey Mouser are just absolutely clearly, and obviously predate D&D, but they're exactly what you would see in a D&D session. And the gag that usually happens with them that I enjoy is that obviously they're being attacked by magic and ghosts and undead and supernatural elements. And the two of them routinely don't believe it. So they have these ridiculously elaborate, like, well, he must have had a mirror or smoke up his arm, or it's, you know, perhaps I was inebriated from last night, because clearly we couldn't have been attacked by a ghost. That's ridiculous. Yes, Great Mountain Sir, I totally agree. And so the ridiculous, elaborate, justifications for why what they just saw clearly couldn't have been supernatural, because only irrational people believe in stuff like that, very much looks like a D&D game where people are coming up with justifications for going in this horrible place, this horrible dungeon that we just established. No one goes down the well. Whatever you do, don't go down the well, right? And then apparently your job is come up with a reason to go down the well where everybody dies.
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff is, I feel, very easy and almost unavoidable in your D&D game as a funny element. So there's that.
Let me take you in another direction, actually. So I have another book to recommend to folks. I'm going to bring it up here in the humor section, but maybe later when we discuss. It's also good for contexts that are not humorous. But Karen Twelves wrote a book called Improv for Gamers. Great book, really good. It basically outlines a whole bunch of exercises that are typically used by improv comedians. And her thesis is this is going to improve your role-playing game if you can convince your group of role-playing gamers to do some of these exercises with you. And so that, I think, like, if you are sitting down and intentionally saying, there's going to be a lot of improvisation in this game, and we want it to be funny, if you just say those words up front, I think that can lead the game in a certain direction. I had a specific experience with this. Let me detail a little more. So there's a great story game called Fall of Magic, which I was introduced to at Origins a couple years ago. It's one of those games where there's barely any rules at all, and we're basically just role-playing characters and making up story as we go, with barely the, you know, little inputs here and there from the system, but there's barely any system at all.
Right.
However, that said, the inputs are there's an ornate looking map, and it has little lines of, little things you're supposed to incorporate into the story, and all of these things push the story in a certain direction of being actually kind of of just being a downer, right? It's kind of a sad story that you're telling about how magic is declining and we're all screwed and it's a terrible time and it's right. It's kind of maudlin, right? This whole story that you end up building. The couple of times I played Fall of Magic, it always ends up in that direction, and then I walk away feeling like, I don't know, that game could have been fun if we played it for laughs. I wonder what that would do. And then recently there was an expansion to the game that Ed gave it sort of different, like, here's a way to play it with this slightly different setting. And one of them is, the swineherd has lost his pigs. And I thought, that's so dumb and basic. I bet if we tried to play it with that setting rather than, oh, magic is collapsing, let's do the swineherd has lost his pigs. And let's specifically sit down and decide, we're going to try and make this funny. And everyone I was playing with was on board. Like, yep, it's going to be funny and it's going to be about pigs. And it was funny. It was pretty darn funny what we came up with.
Great. ZipZap in the comments is saying, I don't think that I've ever been at a table where people would be willing to take part in improv exercises. And I got to say, you know, sometimes, like, I'm really spoiled now. Mm-hmm. So I have great players, and I come, and they get better all the time. I come to the table, and I change things on a weekly basis, and they're like, great, that's what's happening now. And about half of my players here in New York are improvisational comedians, and they have improv groups that perform regularly in town, and at least one or two have other D&D-themed podcasts that you should watch. And it's interesting because it's like they take it more seriously than I would expect, actually. And like, it's like, I'm not, so now I'm wondering, like an actual improv exercise, even with my players, I don't know if that would be digestible or super by surprise. The author's book, is she recommending like an actual exercise at the game table?
So, specifically the book came out of her running a workshop at gaming conventions. She would go to a game convention, run this workshop, and she tried to always get it scheduled very early in the convention with the idea of, I'm going to teach these skills, we're going to do these exercises, and then you're going to take them and apply what you learned throughout the rest of the convention at your normal role-playing games. But there's definitely, I mean, Zip Zap Rap has a very on-point comment there of sort of like, a lot of improv exercises are weird and uncomfortable, and if you, like... Yeah, you might need some convincing to get players to do it. Now, that said, I think one of the interesting things about what Karen Twelves does is she talks about, here's why this applies to roleplay. And maybe there are certain ones you could pluck out. For example, I once ran a Cthulhu game based on sort of a Napoleon-era warship, where everybody was an officer on the ship, right? And so they had titles. There was, somebody was a lieutenant, first lieutenant, second lieutenant, et cetera, et cetera. There are some exercises on status play that can make you a little more conscious about, like, well, what does it mean if you outrank me and I outrank you, and how do I roleplay that in a way that's fun and not confining?
Yeah.
And so that's, I think, potentially, you could shoehorn one of those exercises in by saying, like, hey, this element features strongly in this game, and so I think it would really help us to do this one thing up front.
Okay.
But again, like, yeah, it's good for sure. It's going to take a lot of convincing, and some players are just not going to be happy or comfortable with it. And you need the right group for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you could also make it in character, so you could make like your crazy boss come in and say, "Now we're doing an improv exercise," and have it be in game. So there's less room to dispute it. I feel like, you know, having, you know, getting to see what my players who do improv do for their art form has really benefited my game, actually. I'd never had the opportunity to see live improv until about 2 years ago. And so thinking about how close it is really to running a D&D session has been helpful. And when they explain D&D to people, they say, well, it's improv, but with numbers.
Yeah. Improv with math.
Right, exactly. And when I explain D&D to my math faculty colleagues, I go, well, it's strategy with acting, math. And they're like, oh, okay. And
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wanted to ask, like, you brought up your Cthulhu game, and like, one of the main things I wanted to ask in this is like, how much humor shows up in your horror or Cthulhu games?
Actually, a fair amount. Okay. Definitely, like, I have some. I mean, you played in one of them. You played in one, and I don't want to spoil it. But the premise of that Cthulhu game was, here is a setting that is perhaps known to some of the players, that if you take a very realistic, highly realistic view of it and say, this really happened, you would go, oh God, that's horrible. Right? Like, even just think about D&D. Yep. Think about the setting of D&D and imagine that you were really there, that you personally were there, and there are orcs and dragons, and, like, it's horrific.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was the gist of that game, is, like, interesting thing about that is that a Cthulhu game, then, even though we're, like, we're trying to evoke a sense of horror or a sense of the game being scary, I think much more likely the table ends up laughing. It's not... Like, I know a fair number of Cthulhu DMs who think, like, oh, it's super hard, but I really am trying to scare my players.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever scared my players. I've certainly, in Cthulhu, evoked a sort of a creepy, ooh, I got the willies kind of feeling, and I think that's about the best you can do in Cthulhu.
Okay.
On the other hand, you have to break that up with occasional laughs, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think in a Shakespearean sense, the contrast is important. Now, I have been in, I mean, I don't play those games very much, but I was in another game this past year where, I mean, I was very impressed by the acting. And I mean, there was at least one or two people that really committed to the terrified, insane character, and they did not break character for like 3 or 4 hours. And I was impressed, and then when I talk about it to other people afterwards, they might go, that's a little weird.
Yeah.
And so I'm still kind of wrestling. I mean, at the time, I was just like outright impressed, because that was amazing that they committed to that 100% for the whole time. But, you know, maybe, you know, depending on who you're with, that could possibly be a bit much or a bit weird, actually. Depending on who you're with.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. I mean, it depends. Yeah. I think, again, this gets back to, like, it's important that you talk to your players up front and establish what tone you're looking for and what you want out of your game, right? Yeah. I mean, when we talk about improv, and in this discussion we're talking about improv, we're really talking about improv comedy, but, I mean, there is improv acting that is, like, serious dramatic improv acting, right? Like, that's also a thing.
Correct. You're right.
And so some people may be looking at it like that. And the interesting thing is the exercises are the same. Right. Regardless of whether you're trying to tell a joke collectively or trying to tell a sad story collectively, the techniques are the same. I've seen there's a video out there about D&D that's sort of like trying to explain Dungeons and Dragons to people who've never heard of it. And there's a quote in there from Marisha Ray who says, oh, it's like a big improv exercise. The whole game is like one big improv.
Yeah.
And their game is certainly much more serious. I mean, they joke around and laugh as much as any D&D group does, but they also get much deeper into, like, let's explore our feelings, and they role play making camp, which is not, I've never seen a D&D group role play, oh, we're on camp and on guard duty, let's have a character to character aside.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like looking at critical role play, I think I started to, or maybe I'm remembering what you told me about. I'm starting to like see some of these moments that seem set aside to do that. I mean, I must say that, like, you know, like old school D&D at least is not just improv, because clearly in improv, if everybody on stage says yes to something, that's what the world is like. And with old school D&D, there is this opportunity for a real cold splash of water when the dice come up and say, everybody wanted this and everybody said yes to this. And the fact is, no.
Yep.
The world is exactly the opposite of what you all desired. Now deal with that.
Yep.
And so I like that. I mean, I you know, there's a certain worldview part of that, about the worldview being objective, being a little cold, maybe in a Lovecraftian sense, and really just totally splashing cold water on you once in a while and having to rebound from that. And I like both of those things.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think there's extremes, right? Like you there are improv techniques that will make your game better, more entertaining for everyone. But if you, at some level, if you remove all the rules and you remove all the DM role and the content that the DM created up front, then we're just doing improv. We're just doing improv, and maybe we should stop calling it D&D.
And this goes back to the same, like, do you need any rules?
Yeah.
Debate that some people have, and I'm in the camp of yes, the rules matter, and there should be some, and there shouldn't be overly burdensome. But yeah, if you don't, the rules really make the game what it is.
We are veering hard into another topic, so
like every discussion comes back to that particular touchstone. One thing I should say is that, you know, so early D&D was really pun heavy.
Yes.
And that's one of those things where you can see the DNA still today in 5th edition. So I've noticed some people once in a while, they look at the 5th edition spell material components, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you look really closely, and it doesn't make a big difference to the actual gameplay, but if you look really closely at some of the 5th edition spell components, like the ESP or Read Mind spell, the material component is one copper piece, which is to say, I'm giving you a penny for your thoughts, right? It's kind of hidden in there, right?
Yep.
And the spell component for several illusion spells is a piece of fleece, because we're pulling the fleece over your eyes with this illusion spell.
Yep.
And the fireball component is actually the material for gunpowder. And I had one other thing here. For sleep, it's a pinch of sand, because we need the Sandman to come. And so I think I've seen a couple of people recently going, oh, you know, Wizards of the Coast designers, what a brilliant, you know, hidden little piece. But that is pure Gygax, right? Yeah. That is pure Gygax in 1978 writing the player's handbook and writing all those things. And so that little tiny punny piece of humor and all the spells has been carried through consistently to today. And you can still see it there in the fifth edition book right now.
Yep. Yep. And we've, I mean, you see it, I feel like the place I see the puns the most are the important NPCs who've managed to survive. Right. Right. You see names like Rary, right. And the story of him being created by a player who was looking at the level names for wizards, and the third level wizard is called a medium, and he ultimately wanted to achieve third level so he could be called Medium Rary.
Oh, I can't believe I've never heard that.
No, there you go. That's why his name is Rary.
So Zip Zap Rap is pointing out that the ingredients for the flesh to stone spell is actually the what you need to make real concrete. And I never That's noticed great. That. That's fantastic. Great.
Yeah, isn't lightning bolt also like a metal rod and a piece of wool or something, because you're going to rub them together to make static electricity?
Static electricity, yeah, totally.
Yeah, so certainly there are jokes, but that's interesting because I don't think that those jokes are meant to be jokes that we laugh at while playing the game. Those are like jokes from the author to the reader during prep.
Right, right. But it's not said that. So like if you're like a young OCD person and you don't pick, I'll confess I didn't pick up on that at one point. There was a point when I was running AD&D in high school where I was like, well, this must be important. Please, player, please document all of the material components that you were carrying and explain to me where you got them. I would have needed an explicit line that said, these are jokes to the reader. Don't actually document this stuff. And I personally made that mistake in the past, honestly.
Yeah, 5th edition has now abstracted it such that you get either an arcane focus, which is just an object that you cast all your spells through, or a component pouch, which has all the components you need. And I think their goal was to allow you to still make the jokes if you want the jokes. And I'm sure they're not thinking about jokes. They're thinking about, like, just general, the feel one gets of magic, that where there's a physical component to every spell, which is also interesting.
Yeah. Right?
And so some people maybe want that verisimilitude in their game. And so they want to say, like, yes, I pull out this piece of component and I do this, right? I rub the rod on the piece of wool or whatever. And and it's like, okay, you can do that, but also let's not bother documenting all that on your character sheet and making you roleplay out having to seek out every stupid special component. It's in this, all in this special pouch that you just have.
That's the right choice, and it's totally obvious, and I have totally screwed that up in the past and done totally the wrong thing about that. So it's helpful to spell out exactly where that was, because when you do write jokes like that, not everybody's going to get it, depending on how emotionally dense they are.
All right, so yeah. shall we sum up?
Yes, I think that's a pretty good take on humor in D&D. And I think that at this point, and for me, I needed to hear Peter Adkisson say this first, it's better to have it organically come from the players in the play than to try to pre-script it.
Yeah, and I think you can get that humor, you can promote that humor by having someone or by writing some stuff up front with the thought of this could lead to humor, but you probably don't want to complete the joke, right? You want to just put the ingredients in the setting, and then the players will either grab it or not, or the through play will either grab onto it or not, and there you go.
Right. I agree.
Great. Any other final thoughts about humor in games? Humor and roleplay?
That's it for me. Still still trying to find the right balance, as always. But, you know, I like having it there. But, as the DM, I'm writing serious stuff. And it's, you know, it's up to the players to find that in-game if they want it.
Yeah. But, again, and then as DM, I really super enjoy it when my players do find that humor and bring it to play.
Oh, yeah. It's the best.
It's great. So, if you have comments about games that try to include humor, either successfully or unsuccessfully, or thoughts about how and when to include humor in your role-playing game, please leave them here in our comments for us. We'd love to hear your thoughts or new angles that we can bring into a new chat in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you, starting this week, to Matthew Pablo for our new intro music. We love it to death. And remember that you can follow us on YouTube and Twitter and Twitch by the handle Wandering DMs on all those sites. We are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time, so please come back next week and join us for another thought-provoking discussion. We'll talk to you next time.
See you then.